This is Matt Wells at UN News. The sense that winning the battle against AIDS is a done deal has been slowing progress on reducing new HIV infections. And in reality, it's far from over, according to the chief of the UN agency dedicated to tackling the virus. And what's more, Gunilla Carlson, the acting executive director of UNAIDS, says that if we forget about people at risk, such as intravenous drug users, men who have sex with men and sex workers, we will not solve the problem with the rise of new HIV infections. In an interview with UN News, she said although world leaders had signed up for an AIDS-free generation by 2030, if we don't walk the talk, we might not get there. Ms. Carlson spoke to Liz Scafidi.
I think that there is a notion as if AIDS is over, and it's not. We still see an increase in new infections, and we are still having 770,000 AIDS-related deaths in 2018. So it's far from over, and I think the complacency and the feeling like this is done, that has slowing down progress that we actually have done in the world.
It also illustrates a precarious picture, with some countries making gains, while in others, new HIV infections and AIDS-related deaths are on the rise. Can you speak to that?
Where we see progress, it's good, but it's not fast enough. And the investments and the interest needed should be accelerated, I think, because we know what helps and what can make a difference. And that's when we put communities at the center. That is when we really try to address those people at risk. Where we see an increase in infections, it is where there are lack of protection, where there are no rights, where there are no access to treatment and care, where there happen to be discrimination and perhaps sometimes also criminalization, where there is a lot of stigma. And in some parts of the world, new infections are especially rising in key populations. Sex workers, men having sex with men, people living in prisons, people injecting drugs, transgender, and their partners. And if they are excluded, I mean, they stand globally for 54% of the new infections in the world. So if we tend to forget about people at risk, we will not solve the problem with the rise of new HIV epidemic.
These people at risk, because of stigma and discrimination, they're still being marginalized also with regard to prevention services. How can that be addressed?
I think to have a good discussion around HIV, that this is about sexuality, it is about a virus that can be treatable and also preventable. And I think also if we are trying to shy away from it and hide it, we're also losing a big bulk of the young populations. And still, too many kids are dying of AIDS-related death due to that they don't have access to treatment. So it is a complex issue, but it's getting even more complex and dangerous if we are hiding away from it. And that's why the stigma and the risk of people hiding because they feel ashamed is also something that we have to address. This is nothing to be ashamed about.
I think it's sometimes even more than just being ashamed. Some people are afraid to mention it because they can be stigmatized and even violently hurt.
That's also why I'm admiring a lot of these young people that I do meet when I'm traveling. So I was outside Durban in a little village called Umlasi, and I met with a 19-year-old lady called Aziva and her mother, Fatiswa, and both of them are HIV positive. And this 19-year-old, she was not hiding away from it. She said, I'm HIV positive. She was talking about this with her friends. And the likelihood in that region, because now we are talking about South Africa in KwaZulu-Natal, where up to one-fourth of the young girls below 25 years carry the virus. It is a huge epicenter. As there are brave people in the communities, they start to talk about it. It can also normalize it in one way and then make sure that people have access to treatment, that they know how to protect themselves and not spreading the virus. And that is also part of why we have to have a good global discussion around this. But the risk for many, many others to hide and to not disclose, I think it is because that the communities, the environment are not helpful enough. We have to end that. We have to end stigma and discrimination.
I know in South Africa, LGBTI rights are enshrined in the Constitution, but in many countries, it's illegal. So I would imagine that many people, if they're HIV positive, and they're not supposed to be gay to start off with, so how do they get to this point?
That is a problem when you have laws that discriminate against certain sexual identity or where you are not allowed to have access to services. I must say that there are countries that still have it in their laws, but from a humanitarian and from a health perspective are making it possible. For example, gay men and transgender people to access services and healthcare. But that's not everywhere. We spoke about South Africa. South Africa is very progressive. They have seen a decline both in new infections and AIDS-related death since 2010. So they are addressing it fully, but not at the speed enough, and they are having a full-fledged approach. But many other countries are exactly as you said. They are discriminating, and that means also that it's very hard for those individuals to access treatment in time.
According to the report, how are children faring?
I think we are failing the children. In 2018, there were 770,000 AIDS-related deaths still. I think many people doesn't understand that it's still a health threat, but 100,000 of them were kids below 15 years. And about half of the kids of the world that are living with HIV are not having access to treatment yet.
Are they diagnosed or they don't even know? Or?
Some of them are diagnosed, some of them don't even know. There has been huge success when transmission to mother to child and understanding of preventable programs, but still it's not enough. And that's why we are talking. And the leaders of today have signed up to an AIDS-free generation by 2030. And I think if we are not walking the talk, we might not get there. That's why UNAIDS at this period of time in this global update are actually sounding the alarm bell.
The report also points out that available resources for HIV is drastically falling. Why is that and what will be the impact?
Many reasons. For example, that global donor community have many other challenges as well, and money for development cooperation and foreign aid is kind of drying up. What we also have seen that it's a de-investment in the HIV response too early. So in 2018, the available resources declined by $1 billion, and that there is a huge financial gap now by $7 billion in total. And at the same time, the domestic resource mobilization, that the capacities for countries themselves with high epidemics have not enough resources and systems to carry on the treatment programs. The donor community now really has to think about successes made and don't de-invest too early, because this is something where we really can say that we made a difference. There is a good economics also in doing more to ending AIDS as a global health threat by 2030, but it will need resources on all levels.
You have recently stated the urgent need to increase political leadership in order to end AIDS. How can that help and how can it be done?
We see political leaders have to be more understandable that AIDS is not over, and perhaps also talk about sex, to talk about relations, to talk about not discriminate, and also to stop violence against women and girls. That is also part of what's driving the epidemic. And that is what I call political leadership. So talk about the reality and to put HIV into a context, because it's not only about fighting a virus, it is actually about changing a society. And that's why we are so happy to work with the communities and give voice to those that knows how to change the trends.
In 2013, you served alongside Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and David Cameron and others on the advisory board for the post-2015 development agenda. What was the HIV/AIDS situation like back then as compared to now?
We discussed that not abandon the Millennium Development Goals because there were unfinished business on the role of women in development, and especially also that HIV was not over and it should be inherited into the Sustainable Development Goals. So that's why we now have a bigger agenda where we have still the promise to end AIDS as a global health threat. It's still there and we know that we can do that. When we also spoke about these issues, it was about the role of women in society. I really feel sad to know that 6,200 adolescent girls and young women are infected every week. And they are vulnerable because it's also part of unequal power relations. It is about sex. It's about violence sometimes. It's about lack of resources. It's about non-consensual sex. And we spoke at that commission a lot about addressing the needs and the roles of these young people in the societies, to give them voice, to give them power, and to be part of development. But when we see the increase of new infections, HIV, in these groups, we have to say that we are not doing good enough on all levels, and also to make sure that we can end these figures, but we have to do better. Actually, also Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohammed was part of this commission. We also spoke about violence against women, and it is not only about mass violence, it's not only about rape, it's also about domestic violence. So there are many reasons really to now address the gender discussion around this, and also to make sure that men feel confident, because men, have we seen, are accessing treatment sometimes too late, and they are not willing to go and get tested. So this is not an agenda that you can solve with only women. We have to work together on this, and we know what works.